Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 54 at 21,807. S&P 500 Index up 7 at 2,465. NASDAQ up 17 at 6,393. Russell 2000 Small and Mid Caps up 2 at 1,402. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note up 4 basis points at 2.11%. Oil up 55 cents at $49.17 a barrel. Gold down $5.90 at $13.34.50 an ounce. Well, the major stock indices did what they've been doing all year long, shrugged off worries, continued on the trend. In the background, the economy continues to slug along with good, not great, growth. Companies continue to report good earnings. Expectations for tax reform and infrastructure spending are diminishing, but on the bright side, we're not engaged in a nuclear war with North Korea, so it all kind of balances out. Bank of America Merrill Lynch, for one, thinks investors should be more confident on equities. The firm said in a research note that it recommends being bullish given that the first synchronized upswing in the global economy since 2007 is a strong tailwind for earnings. By its reckoning, the firm figures global corporate profits are running 13.5% higher than last year. That's in line with the gain in the benchmark MSCI All World Country Index, suggesting stock prices have not gotten ahead of themselves. To be sure, there are plenty of other issues on the horizon to worry about, but for now the trend is in place until something blows up. In a rebuke to Republican leaders, Trump backed Democrats' plans to support a deal that would fund Hurricane Harvey aid, but only raise the debt ceiling for 3 months. Those two items would also be tied to a measure to keep the government open through the end of December, setting up a hugely complicated year-end crush of must-pass items. Republicans would have preferred a longer extension to avoid another fight in December. Democrats could use the opportunity as leverage to attach a provision aimed at codifying into law the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Nothing signed yet, but it looks like the debt ceiling crisis has been kicked down the road for now. I'm not sure we can call it bipartisanship, but it's not a debt default. Debt ceiling jitters were particularly high yesterday when the Treasury Department auctioned $20 billion of one-month bills at a rate of 1.3%, which was higher than the 1.23% yield on two-year Treasury notes. Those who were brave enough to buy at those rates saw the value of the bills soar today as the rate dropped to 1.02%. On the stump for tax reform in Dakota this afternoon, Trump repeated one of his favorite campaign claims that Americans pay more in taxes than any other country. Except that's not true. In fact, the U.S. ranks in the middle of the pack when compared with the roughly 36 developed countries tracked by the Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD. And our tax rate is ranked 4th from the bottom, among the very lowest. Stanley Fisher, the vice chairman of the Federal Reserve, announced today that he would resign in mid-October. Fisher joined the Fed's board in 2014 after a distinguished career as an academic economist and an international policymaker. Fisher brought a hawkish voice to Fed deliberations on monetary policy, arguing that the Fed should be raising interest rates more quickly, sparring with Janet Yellen, the Fed chairwoman. But he provided reliable support for measures strengthening financial regulation. Trump has not been in a rush to refill the Fed's board. There were two vacancies when he took office, and a third seat opened in the spring. So far, the White House has put forward only one candidate, Randall Quarles, a Utah investor nominated in July. Fisher's departure is unlikely to shift monetary policy in the near term. The Fed is widely expected to announce after its next meeting in mid-September that it will begin to reduce its holdings of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. 2 weeks before a Fed policy meeting, the Fed publishes its Beige Book, which collects and presents anecdotes of economic trends from policymakers, business contacts around the country. All 12 Fed districts reported moderate to modest economic growth. Companies are not passing along higher input costs to consumers in the form of more expensive products and services. Instead, they're accepting lower profit margins. The majority of districts reported limited wage pressures and modest to moderate wage growth. The Fed said that consumer spending increased in most districts and that many contacts were becoming worried about a prolonged slowdown in the auto industry. The Beige Book, based on information collected on or before August 28th, said there was not enough time to gauge the full extent of the flooding from Hurricane Harvey. The Atlanta and Dallas Fed banks reported the storm created broad disruptions to economic activity along the Gulf Coast. Economic reports today show the trade deficit rose slightly in July, keeping the U.S. on track to post a larger gap in 2017 than in 2016. The deficit edged up to $43.7 billion in July from $43.5 billion in June. A reading on services activity, meanwhile, came in better than expected, providing an added lift to the outlook for the health of the economy. ISM services were at 55.3 in August. That compares to 53.9 in the prior period. Any reading above 50 indicates expansion. Hurricane Irma has hit a few islands in the Caribbean, including St. Martin's and St. Thomas, and is now closing in on Puerto Rico. The imminent threat of a natural disaster comes as the territory deals with a massive economic disaster. In May, the Commonwealth filed the biggest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. Puerto Rico has some $74 billion in debt and another $50 billion in pension obligations on the books. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, already has about 400 people in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands to help with hurricane preparation and response. Puerto Rico will surely need and get federal assistance. A severe disaster, however, could exacerbate some of the Commonwealth's adverse economic trends, including migration to the U.S. mainland. The official forecast path shows that Irma's center could track along either side of the Florida Peninsula or might just head right up the middle of Florida. Where Irma turns north will be critical for determining what part of Florida experiences the most dangerous impacts from Irma. Regardless, conditions in South Florida may go downhill as soon as midday Saturday. Irma is a Category 5, and it is a very large hurricane. It's wider than the state of Florida, so despite the uncertainty in its track, there is a threat of rainfall flooding and strong winds capable of triggering power outages, downing trees, and perhaps some structural damage will likely occur to some degree well inland from wherever Irma makes landfall into a swath of the southeast early next week. And just a side note on hurricanes, the NFL season kicks off tomorrow night, but I would like to go ahead and nominate J.J. Watt as the league MVP. The Houston Texan defensive player put together a fundraising effort for Hurricane Harvey relief. He's already raised $27 million. And while we're at it, a tip of the hat to Oklahoma. The Sooner State has offered aid to Burnt Orange Country. Volunteers from agencies in Oklahoma, such as the American Red Cross, Children's Disaster Services, Convoy of Hope, Mercy Chefs, the Salvation Army, Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, and Operation Barbecue will be going to Texas. Just in case you're wondering, Operation Barbecue is a real thing. It started in 2011 when Joplin, Missouri was hit by a tornado. Volunteers from competition barbecue teams from 8 states answered the need to help feed displaced families, police, fire, National Guard, and emergency personnel. They served up over 120,000 meals over 13 days. Operation Barbecue. You may know it by its other name, Ribs Sans Frontières. The Gap plans to close about 200 underperforming Gap and Banana Republic locations. There are currently about 2,000 Gap and Banana Republic stores worldwide, so the closures would likely impact about 10% of them. Gap declined to specify how many of each brand's stores will close or where the soon-to-be-shuttered stores are located. One bright spot for Gap has been Old Navy, its less expensive clothing brand. When Gap reported earnings last month, Old Navy outperformed the other brands once again. While comparable sales at Gap fell by 1% and Banana Republic sales down 5%, Old Navy saw a 5% increase. The company added that it plans to continue making significant investments in online operations, including artificial intelligence technology. Shares of the Gap were up 7.4% today. Closing 200 stores and the stock jumps higher. No, it doesn't really make sense. Restoration Hardware announced a forecast for third quarter and full year adjusted earnings that flew past its previous expectations. That sent shares 30% higher in extended trading. The stock is heavily shorted. The big move looks like a short squeeze. Intel has won a point in its antitrust battle with the European Commission. The American tech industry as a whole may be feeling a little victorious as well. The Court of Justice of the European Union ordered a lower court to re-examine the 1.6 billion euro, or nearly $1.3 billion, fine imposed on Intel in 2009 for abuse of its dominant position in the computer chip market. This does not mean Intel is in the clear, just getting a second chance to present their side of the case. The decision is considered a setback for the European Union antitrust authorities, who have been investigating American tech giants like Google and Qualcomm. Best-selling electric car is the Nissan Leaf, and today Nissan announced it's updated the car for the first time since it was introduced in 2010. Biggest change? 200-mile range. Dow Industrial's up 54 to finish at 21,807. S&P 500 up 7 at 2465. And the NASDAQ Composite up 17 at 6,393. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio, and the daily blog, eatthebankers.com.